For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of the most intelligent cave dwellers you're ever going to meet, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell and Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, it's been a kind of an auspicious week with President Trump addressing the United Nations General Assembly. There were some things that came out in there in his speech that pointed right to socialism and, you know, maybe kind of opened up that can of worms as to what does the church teach on socialism?
Right. I think there's a lot of confusion out there right now about what the church actually does teach about socialism. So we're going to, after a break here, we're going to talk to a longtime
expert
and a longtime friend of the show, Dr. Paul Kengor. He was just here in Indianapolis not too long ago, speaking at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Fantastic talk. So we will get Dr. Kengor on the line here, and we will ask him a little bit about Trump's remarks and also a little bit about socialism and what the church has to say about it.
And we'll be back with that right after this. The Great Lakes Gabriel Project is a Christian-based network of volunteers committed to offering assistance to women and families facing difficult or unplanned pregnancies. In October, the Gabriel Project will hold three fundraising dinners, Thursday, October 19th at Our Lady of the Greenwood, Tuesday, October 24th at the Northside Knights of Columbus, and Friday, October 27th at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Anderson, Indiana. David Bangs will be the keynote speaker at all of the dinners. To register or for more information regarding dates, times, and cost, you can go online to goangels.org or call 317-847-3825.
Radio is one of the biggest tools that God uses to get truth and hope in life.
To get the truths and the promises of God
into the ears and the hearts of people driving around.
Into the hearts of people through these airways.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. And in the cave, we are delighted to welcome back a great friend of the show, Dr. Paul Kengor. He is a New York Times best-selling author, professor of political science, as well as the executive director for the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. He's written a ton of different books, and we're going to talk about some of them today. But listeners may remember it was just, maybe 6-8 weeks ago where Dr. Kengor was on the show and in town, and we got a chance to see him live and talk about his latest work, which phenomenal book called A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and The Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. So please welcome back Dr. Paul Kengor.
Hey, guys. Yeah, great to be back. And that was Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in Carmel, and the people were great. I mean, I was just blown away. I couldn't believe all the people who came, for one thing. The church was packed, and just everybody there was wonderful. I love Indianapolis and that whole area, and you know, that was truly a special night. So, and it was good to meet you guys too in person for a change.
We don't get out much, so that was really fun for us too. I mean, it was a ridiculous amount of fun that night too. It was so informative and just a great chance for all, everyone to kind of come together and meet you in person and kind of hear firsthand, and a great Q&A, you know, session right after your lecture.
Right.
Such an important thing, and it ties right into current events right now. I mean, we are literally on the heels of President Trump delivering a really remarkable address at the United Nations. And in particular, what caught my attention is he made some references to socialism. And I want to kind of maybe let's start there a little bit, because that has such important ties into this last book of yours, because it focuses on sort of the relationship, or confrontation might be a better word, between Holy Mother Church and communism and socialism. So let's start. Dr. Kangor, tell us a little bit about this. What struck you about President Trump's address to the United Nations?
Yeah, well, I mean, among other things, the Venezuela comment, and in response to that, Maduro, the leader of Venezuela, just exploded and compared Trump to Hitler, which you know, pretty much is no surprise at all. I mean, that's exactly what they do, and it reminds me of Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez, who started all of this in Venezuela, and it reminds me of his UN speech. The one that came when Obama first came into office, and previously he had, Hugo Chavez had gone to the UN and said, it smells like sulfur in here.
Right, and he I remember said, that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He said that in reference to George W. Bush, who he compared to the devil. He was really good at making analogies to the devil. He once referred to various Catholic Church officials in Venezuela as devil's investments. As he put it.
Oh, good Lord.
And so, yeah, he was really a piece of work. And in the process, he was implementing what he called 21st century socialism, which was really just, you know, 20th century communism, going by a different name. And then he got there to the UN when President Obama became president, and he just grinned and he said, it doesn't smell like sulfur in here anymore. It smells like hope. That's what he said, and he gave Obama a book on colonialism and imperialism. So you know now we've got
and a man hug too. Didn't he give him kind of a man hug?
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
I remember that. Yeah,
he gave him a big hug, and you know Obama said he wishes that he had brought a copy of his book to give it to Chavez in return. he really did say that.
Oh,
I know
my.
It's crazy, but you can't make this stuff up.
Right.
And so then, you know, Chavez proceeded to utterly destroy, you know, the country in the Latin American Western Hemisphere that ought to be the wealthiest country in Latin America in the Western Hemisphere because of all the oil that they have.
Yeah,
go ahead.
For those who may not have heard the quote from President Trump, let's just take a listen to what he had to say on Venezuela. Here it is.
The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
Dead silence.
Yeah,
more silence.
That's a great line.
Not much there. Yeah. And then a little applause, and he finally comes back.
From the Soviet Union to Cuba to Venezuela, wherever true socialism or communism has been adopted, it has delivered anguish and devastation and failure. Those who preach the tenets of these discredited ideologies only contribute to the continued suffering of the people who live under these cruel systems.
Dead silence. It was just one of those situations where he was absolutely not preaching to the choir.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they were waiting for the translation, eh, guys?
Right. Yeah. Well, I was thinking about who the audience is there in the UN, and there are not a lot of freedom-loving democracy-promoting.
I'm picturing the poor translators who are going, I don't want to say that. Oh, right. No. I'm not telling him that.
Right. That might be their last day. Right. So Dr. Kangor, just for our audience, how would you define socialism? We hear the word thrown around a lot.
Right.
What is socialism?
Well, that's actually immensely complicated to even try to define. And I teach a whole course just called Marxism, and you know currently in the current semester that I'm teaching at Grove City College, Grove City, PA. Comparative politics, we're right now talking about the differences between socialism, Marxism, you know, capitalism, pure capitalism, and part of the problem, I'll back it up to Karl Marx said clearly in the Communist Manifesto that socialism was a stage, a kind of a way station on the way to full communism. So, you know, socialism would eventually lead to full communism. But you know, what's actually happened is so many communists use the term synonymously. And in fact, you know, here's a quick quiz for everybody. USSR, you know, which of course was the home of communism, of Marxism-Leninism. You know, what does one of those S's stand for, right?
Socialism.
United Soviet Socialists,
right?
Socialist republics. And if you go to the website of, like, People's World, which is the flagship publication for Communist Party USA, it's the successor publication to the Daily Worker. I mean, they refer to themselves very rarely as communists. They use the word socialist. And in fact, to tell you the truth, guys, if you go there, you'll see themselves using the word progressive even more than they use the word socialism or communism. Mm-hmm. So in a way, they're kind of, I think sometimes they're using these terms synonymously because they truly see them as synonymous. Other times they're using them, I think, tactically, right, because they know it's easier. People will find, they think socialism isn't quite full communism, so they can get away with it. It's more palatable. You know, then you got people like Bernie Sanders. And, you know, I had a Sanders supporter last week, like a 60-year-old guy, not a 20-something, but 60-year-old guy. And he told me, he said, oh, it's okay, I'm a democratic socialist. And I
wasn't that East Germany? Isn't that East Germany?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's right. And actually, even before that, Lenin and Trotsky and the Bolsheviks, you know, they were originally the Social Democratic Party of Russia.
Yeah. Okay.
They got together in 1903 in exile. This was in Brussels and also in London. It was like a 2-week conference, and they all met and they divided into the majority, which became the Bolsheviks, and the minority, which became the Mensheviks. But they were social democrats. Herbert Marcuse, the founder of Cultural Marxism, another German, he was a social democrat. Hitler was a nationalist socialist. The Nazis were the nationalist socialist German Workers' Party. So, you know, guys like Fulton Sheen used to say, you know, there's not a dime's worth of difference between these two. You know, the commonality in the two of them is hate. And, you know, one of them, like the Nazis, persecutes based on race, and the other, the communists, persecutes based on class. So, but they're all kind of big government. They want the public sector as it is to control the means of production. They want to redistribute wealth. And I guess probably like most Americans and most Westerners who would call themselves socialists would say, well, you know, we don't want 90 or 100% tax rates, but we'll take 50 to 70% tax rates, right?
Right.
You know, we don't want the government controlling everything, Bernie Sanders says, but I would want the government controlling some things. So, sorry, it's kind of a long answer, but maybe that helps a little bit.
No, it does. It reminds me a little bit, I would say, it sounds like, between communism, socialism, progressivism, you know, different dresses, same dance.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. And again, you know, somebody like Hugo Chavez, he coined this term 21st century socialism. And he said, you know, that's what we're going to do in Venezuela, 21st century socialism. But if you read about what he's actually done there, and especially if you read about the actual effects of what he's done, you know, people waiting in line to buy toilet paper, and, you know, then buying, like, you know, 50 rolls at a time and then, you know, taking it home and keeping it because they know it's going to run out. And then the government attacks them as hoarders, right?
Right.
As, you know, as filthy rich capitalists. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, well, here we go, 21st century. This is basically 21st century socialism is looking a lot like 20th century communism. What's the difference? And so in a lot of cases there's really not. But that was beautifully put by Trump. In one of my writings on Venezuela, I quote a professor, and I wish I had it in front of me, but she made the comment that, oh well, what's really wrong in Venezuela isn't that they've implemented socialism or communism, but that the government really hasn't done it enough.
Right. That one drives me nuts.
Right.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, they do that
It's complete failure. All the subjective data that shows how just completely awful things are. This, what do you call it? Trump called it these cruel systems. And then the response is, we just got to keep trying harder. You know, it's like they can't abandon the project.
Yeah, and they always say, it just hasn't been done correctly. You know, let us socialists, let us communists in power, give us more power, and then we'll do it the right way this time. And then the truth is, there have been so many variations of communism and socialism and Marxism, Leninism, and Maoism, and what was done in Cuba and Venezuela and everywhere else. I mean, it's like you guys have tried like 200 different models. is it somebody? Can somebody get it right at some point? Why do 200 out of 200 have to fail? They say this all the time, and they to quote Ronald Reagan, they never seem to learn. Right? They never seem to learn. Maddening.
We need to take a break, and we'll be right back with more with Dr. Paul Kengor on The Catholic Cave right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, and we have Professor Paul Kengor from Grove City College, and we were talking about socialism in reaction to President Trump's fantastic speech at the UN the other day. And I wanted to read this quote for you, Professor Kengor. It's from Pope Pius XI in 1931. And Pope Pius says, "Religious socialism, Christian socialism are contradictory terms. No one can be at the same time a good Catholic and a true socialist." So it seems pretty clear there that socialism is pretty condemned by the church. But yet, I think, especially during the last election, there was a lot of discussion whether anything and everything that's called socialism, is that really truly condemned by the church? Or, you know, has the term changed? Has what people mean by socialism changed over the years? So does the church really still condemn socialism?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, this is something that the church has been so consistent on for such a long time. And, you know, I like to go back to 1846, and that was Pope Pius IX when he released his encyclical called Qui Pluribus. And that was, if it wasn't his first encyclical, guys, it was like the second, right? And he was Pope, this is off the top of my head, but I think it was 1846 to 1878 for like 32
years. A long time,
years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was the longest serving next to Peter, right? And you know, in that, and the date I always remember, I never forget, because like I said, I teach communism, Marxism, and I talk about the Communist Manifesto. In fact, today in my class, Comparative Politics, we're reading from Marx and Engels' 10-point plan and the Communist Manifesto. Communist Manifesto came out in 1848. So Pius IX, Qui Pluribus, came out in 1846. Two years before Marx and Engels even wrote the Communist Manifesto. And they didn't invent communism with that book, but the Communist Manifesto was intended to be what communists in Europe were seeking out as a programmatic manifesto to describe what the party really believes. By the way, they use the term a revolutionary catechism. They actually use the term catechism. Right?
Oh, my.
They really enjoyed taking religious terms like that and inverting them and turning them on their head. But back in 1846, Pius IX was warning about communism, socialism, all that different stuff. And, you know, it was all part of the same, you know, nasty, bloody mess that violated the natural law, that did everything from take people's private property rob them of religious rights. And in a number of the encyclicals that came out throughout the 1800s and even the 1900s, and my favorite all time is 1937, Divini Redemptoris, which was by the same pope that you noted with the quote, Mark, Pope Pius XI. And you know, that one warned about how communism would destroy the family, it even said. Communism would destroy the family. But they saw, the church understood a difference between, and guys like Fulton Sheen did this too, because they studied it very carefully. They knew that there were nuances, there were definite differences between how Marx and these guys used the word socialism and how they used the word communism. But they saw all of this as, you know, as anti-God, anti-natural law, and all of it as dangerous. So with Pius XI saying you can't be a good Catholic and at the same time be a socialist.
Now you have you have socialism that showed up in Britain for a while. You know, there was a socialist party there. You have socialism in the Scandinavian countries that to a certain extent I think people still point to that as models of socialism that supposedly work. Has the church really come out and said anything, critical of that type of socialism? Is that a different type of socialism? I mean, do we still consider that socialism?
Yeah, just like the Scandinavian model, for example.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, not that I know of. And I think that's because, those models, at least as they were being pursued in like the 70s and 1980s, they were more about high tax rates, some degree of redistribution of wealth, welfare states, nationalized health care. But even then, when the Scandinavian countries, when people were abandoning religion as they have been, there wasn't like a flat out direct assault on religion, on the family. They weren't redefining marriage then like they have now. So and now really a number of those countries have freed their economies quite a bit in the last 10 or 20 years. That so-called Scandinavian third way, right? The Norwegian third way. They've moved away from a lot of that, from what they were doing in the 1980s, because it was bankrupting them. But the church really has more often called out stuff further to the left, more like hardcore communism, and I must add here too, liberation theology, which is a kind of bastardized mess, a perversion of Catholic Church teachings, trying to create some sort of Catholic Church Marxist admixture. Packaged under this phrase liberation theology that was being pursued in Central America, Latin America in the 1970s and 1980s. And that, of course, caused Pope John Paul II to reprimand a number of bishops in Latin America at the time, a number of priests in Latin America that were pursuing this. So the church has called that out for sure. And as recently as Pope Benedict XVI, I mean, he gave a number of statements even in Spes Salvi, which was his 2007 encyclical, calling out Marxism in that encyclical. People forget that. In fact, I've got the exact quote here in front of me. Pope Benedict wrote in Spes Salvi, quote, "Marx's fundamental error also became evident. He showed precisely how to overthrow the existing order, but he did not say how matters should proceed thereafter. He simply presumed that with the expropriation of the ruling class, with the fall of political power and the socialization of the means of production, the New Jerusalem would be realized." So, Pope Benedict XVI was even calling out Marx and attacking Marxism and variants of socialism as recently as about 10 years ago.
Yeah, there's an opposition there in Marxism and socialism to an idea of a natural order, to an idea that, economies have sort of a natural shape, families have a natural shape, society has a natural shape of itself. And so, socialism, by definition, is a revolutionary movement to kind of overthrow the natural order that the church is always going to stand on and always uphold.
Well, that's right. In fact, Marx said communism represents the most radical rupture in traditional relations. It's all about the fundamental transformation of the natural order. And, you know, to quote Benedict again from Space Salvi on Marx, I think this right here explains not just a lot of communists, but a lot of socialists who consider themselves socialists but not communists, including some of them within the church. And Benedict said this of Marx, quote, "He thought that once the economy had been put right, everything would automatically be put right. His real error is materialism," he said of Marx. Mm-hmm. "Man, in fact, is not merely the product of economic conditions, and it is not possible to redeem him purely from the outside by creating a favorable economic environment," unquote. And I think that applies to a lot of modern-day progressives, where they think if we can just redistribute wealth right, if we can just do what we want economically with the state and with government, then we'll be able to create that new Jerusalem, right? You know, the key is giving us the levers of power and getting the economy right. And Benedict and others in the church has always said, no, you got to get religion right. You got to get the soul right. It's not getting the economy right. You're thinking materialistically when your utopia is viewed through the prism of economic and class. And I see that with a lot of leftist Catholics, right, who social justice for them really is socialism, and it shouldn't be. That's not what it's supposed to be. A friend of mine from my church wears a shirt. It says social justice begins in the womb, right?
And it does.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what the church means by it. But so many of our social justice warriors in the church, for them, social justice is about like a socialist form of economic wealth redistribution. And that's really not how the church thinks about it.
Well, we're coming up on a break again, but I tell you what, after the break, let's take this back up again and talk a little bit about social justice and what the church has to say about social justice and how that sort of plays with socialism and communism.
And we'll be right back with more with Dr. Paul Kengore on The Catholic Cave right after this.
Ever since we've been on the air at Catholic Radio, we've always wanted to have billboards, but they just don't fit in our budget. And since you'll probably never see a real billboard for us, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine one. In your mind, picture a large, empty billboard. Yeah, that's it. Now pick a background color, any color at all. Okay, then across the top of your billboard, put just two words, Catholic Radio. Make them really big. Then, below that in even bigger letters, put 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Wow, that's a great billboard. Now, if this billboard were real, all of your friends and neighbors could see it, and they'd know all about Catholic Radio. But since it's only an imaginary billboard, we're going to have to depend on you to tell your friends about Catholic Radio. Remember, Catholic Radio 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Oh, and by the way, nice choice on that background color. It really looks good.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. And in the cave, we still have Dr. Paul Kengore from Grove City College. And hey, Dr. Kengore, I want to ask you, since you're an active professor, you're teaching courses right now, I wonder if you would comment on this. It seems to me that part of the allure among, the millennials or 20-something crowd, their fascination and seemingly advocacy for socialism might reside in the association with socialism and social justice. They seem, young people are for social justice, right? And as Catholics, we also favor social justice, properly understood. But it seems like what I'm picking up, and tell me this is your observation as well, that in order to achieve, a young person may see the way to achieve social justice is through socialism. That's how we do it. What do you think?
Well, it's true. And also, I mean, that's what they're learning in their schools, in their colleges. In fact, I get asked to give this presentation all around the country that I do for groups like Young America's Foundation and others. and it's called Why Communism is Bad.
Well, I'm surprised you get invited anywhere.
Right, that's right? Exactly
it seems,
right.
Seems and, countercultural.
Oh, and they're desperate, these students are. In fact, I spoke at one college where I had about 100 students in the audience, and they, one of them told me, he said, you know, the poli-sci professor literally has a bust of Karl Marx in his office, and he wasn't there, and he didn't send his class. And the only professor who came was a Polish, a guy who lived in Poland in the 70s and 80s, and was now teaching like physics in the United States. And he told me he was the only registered Republican out of 150 faculty members at his college.
Yeah.
How's that for diversity?
Right.
Just amazing stuff. But they they're desperate to learn this information. But there are surveys on this. In fact, one was done October 2016. This is Reason Magazine Roop Foundation. This is a regular survey that they do. And 37% of millennials said that they had a very unfavorable view of communism. And it was 25% had a favorable view of Vladimir Lenin. And one in five of them, first-time voters, so this would be 21% of them, said that they would vote for a communist for president. They would vote for a communist for president. That's one in five. And when you consider that Bernie Sanders, who is a lifetime unapologetic professing socialist, an open socialist, he got 13 million votes in the Democratic primary. For people to have an idea of that, Donald Trump got 14 million votes in the Republican primary. And, you know, Trump bragged about that, about how that was the most votes that a Republican ever got in the Republican primary. And it was. It was 14 million, but guess what? Bernie got 13 million. So, and you know, a lot of people think that if not for some shenanigans by the Hillary camp, that Bernie Sanders would have been the Democratic Party nominee for president. You know, that's a lifetime socialist. And it's not just millennials. This is an amazing statement. 64% of Americans generally said that they agree with Marx's famous credo, maxim, quote, from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. So yeah, that's 64%. And I've seen this too. Most Americans don't even know that Marx said that. The vast majority don't even know that he said that. But if there's good news in this, in the surveys, when they dig deeper and they ask these millennials in particular who self-identify as socialists or who say positive things about communism, socialism, they'll say, well, tell us what you think communism is, right? And that's when they say things like, oh, well, it's about helping your fellow man, right?
Right. You know, the platitudes come out.
Yeah,
it's about taking money from the rich and sharing it with the poor, right? Yeah, it's about redistributing wealth. And the one that I hear all the time that drives me nuts, well, communism is a pretty good idea in practice, right?
If you just have to do it right.
You just have to do it right. They always say, if you just read the Communist Manifesto, it's really a pretty good book, right? It talks about sharing. And when I hear that, I always say to them, really, have you read it? And they say, well,
yeah, that's true.
I'll have time for that.
And everything. I try to do this with charity, which is hard because I have had to go through this so many times. I'll just look at them and say, listen, read it, okay?
Right.
It's about 50 pages. It's really short, and when you're done reading that, you're going to say, this is not a pretty good idea. This is awful, and you're going to have to kill people to implement this. And Marx and Engels even say, this will, of course, require despotism. Despotic inroads will be necessary to achieve this, because there's no way that you take away people's private property without having to shoot a lot of people. And that's what the church and Fulton Sheen and others realized when they simply read the book.
Right.
They read the book. They said, this, you're going to have to kill a lot of people to do this.
And then they did.
And that's what happened.
Yeah, and that's exactly right.
Well, you know, if I remember back to Bernie Sanders' campaign, he, you know, a lot of what he talked about was not the, I guess, means to getting there, but he laid out kind of the end point, and it did look attractive because it was a lot of the same thing that the church teaches as far as social justice. Now, of course, as an avowed socialist, you know, his way of getting there is quite different, I think, than the church. And I think it goes back to that distinction between the materialism of Marxism versus the religious nature and the respect for the individual that's within church teaching.
Well, and it's also the means that are really critical about how we get to the goal. For example, you know, the church would say, and you know, I would say this too. John Paul II would say this. Pope Benedict XVI would say it. Pope Francis would say it. You know, we believe that, you know, a genuinely just society really should try to ensure that everybody has health care, right? But the question is, how do you go about doing that? And you know, guys like me, and I think also, you know, our popes, you know, that would point to something like subsidiarity, that they would say, well, the best way to try to achieve it, first of all, is at the local level, the individual level, the local level that's always closest to the problem. You know, the borough, the county, the state, meaning state like, you know, Indiana, your home state, Pennsylvania, my home state, the Little Sisters of the Poor, the Sisters of Mercy, this hospital, that hospital, this nonprofit group, that nonprofit group. And then, you know, only if all else has failed and there's somehow 10 million people out there out of a 200 million population that for some reason haven't been able to get health care, we can't figure out why, and you can't get at any of those local levels, then maybe you go to a federal program to, you know, to try to figure out how to reach those people. But the difference is with the socialists and the communists, you know, they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? They say, forget all of that. You know, we're going to centralize, socialize, communize the entire American healthcare system and have a single payer where everything is done through the federal government, through the department of whatever, whatever, and that's how everybody's going to get their health care. And you know, we say, believing in things like subsidiarity, well, we don't think that's the best way to do it. You know, why don't we let individuals have choice? Why don't we let them shop for their health care? It's not a perfect system, but it's a pretty good one. So the argument there isn't over goals. We all want people to have health care, but it's over the means and you know, how you go about getting there.
Yeah, you know, the centralized approach just seems so much easier, so much more efficient, you know. It's a lot harder to go around and try to teach everybody to be charitable and to try to teach everybody to be responsible and act virtuously. Yeah, that's a lot harder than it is just to kind of create a centralized committee that can kind of dictate this from on high.
Right, yeah, and that, you're right, and it sounds easier, right? Or it sounds cleaner, neater, right? Let's just have one department to cover all of this. But the problem is that we've seen with mass centralization and collectivization that doesn't really work very well. You know, it's why we have, I mean, just think about your daily life with shopping and all the other things that you do. You go to a million different sources for everything. I mean, you know, very, very rarely are you going to, like, you know, a single monopoly that covers whatever. I mean, really, if you think about it, there aren't any monopolies in America,
right?
except for what the federal government monopolizes, right? I mean, we're talking about education. We have, I mean, look at all the different educational options that you have, especially for college. Although with public education, which is largely government schools and government-run, you're forced to go to your local public school, and you have no choice. And for a lot, this is the whole school choice argument. There's a lot of inner-city kids whose parents are really stuck, and they say, I don't want to send my kid to that school. You know, that is going to get a bad education there. It's a dangerous environment. I like to be able to shop around and pick where I go, like you can with college. You know, you have choice with college education. I love to give liberals a dose of their own medicine and tell them that, sorry, but you can't send your kid to Harvard or Berkeley. You're going to have to send them to one of the schools within a 20-mile radius of your home. You know, one of the state schools, and see how they like that.
Right, exactly.
Take that. How do you like that? The only kids that could go to Berkeley are people who live in the San Francisco area, right? The only ones who could live and go to Harvard have to live in the Boston area. No, you know, we give them choice in those areas, and I prefer to have choice in my healthcare system. You know, I'd rather not have to go to the department of whatever in the future for my healthcare. But you're right. You know, the kind of simplicity of it sounds better and sounds neater. Oh, well, let's just get the government to cover them. But the government systems often don't work very well. And again, look at socialist countries, look at communist countries, and look at how well government healthcare has worked in all of those places.
Well, also too, those are excellent points. But the other thing that comes to mind to me too is a Catholic. There's no guarantee that a centralized totalitarian system, how well that's going to align with my Catholic faith and what I think should be going on, right? And if I'm within if the government, you know, engulfs the entire sphere of both public and private life, then there's no getting around it. And then you're sort of forced into a kind of cooperation, often maybe with entities that may truly have evil or wicked ends in mind. And I'll bring up real quick someone I know you've read and appreciate, which is Vaclav Havel, right? And when he brings up in his essay, The Power of the Powerless, about the green grocer, right, who has to put the sign out every day, right? So this is, you know, you have to go to like East Germany, like in 1960, and every day the guy running his little grocery store, because it's government owned and run, he has to put this little sign out in his window when he opens up the shop that says "Workers of the World Unite." You know, a kind of slogan, right? A communist slogan. Well, he doesn't believe in that. He's only putting it out there to defend himself from the power of the state to what? To unemploy him, to demote him, to restrict access to, say, vacation or the kind of education or opportunities that his children may face. He's forced into, he's forced by coercion to participate in the project of the state that he doesn't believe in by putting the sign. And then the sign in and of itself being in the window becomes what? A signal to everyone walking by or that enters that grocery store that he's a kind of dupe, right?
Yeah.
That his arms being twisted to go along with it, to go along with this big lie. And with that, we're going to have to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back again. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kengor. We're talking about socialism, and there's a lot more ahead. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Three things keep Catholic Radio Indy on the air. One is our fervent desire to spread the gospel message. Two is your donations to the station. We couldn't survive without them. And three is underwriting from area businesses. Every month, these businesses make donations to the station. Please support them. Visit their stores, send them an email, or call them. Let them know that you appreciate their support of Catholic Radio. It's a great way to thank our underwriters for their very important support.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kengor, and Tim brought up huge hero of ours, Vaclav Havel, right before we took a break, and you know, him talking about the power of conscience.
Yeah, well, you know, Mark, it made me think what Tim was saying about like Catholic pharmacists in the United States who are right now, and they're in the private sector. They have a Catholic pharmacy. But the state is telling them they got to provide contraception that violates their religious beliefs, right? That they've got to provide the morning after pill to a woman if she comes in asking for it. And you know, we're afraid right now of you know, state-run hospitals of pro-life nurses and doctors being forced to participate in abortions. And you know, the more and more that the government completely controls that, they're going to coerce people to comply with the laws of the state. And another thing that you won't be able to do, and we're seeing this already with, like, the marriage debate, you won't be able to cite your religious faith as an acceptable objection to what the state is trying to compel you to do. I spoke last week at the University of Louisville, and I was speaking on Reagan and John Paul II, and I had a group of, like, military fellows that were in the room with me, and so, you know, they work for the government, and one girl came up to me afterwards, and she said, "Thank you so much for talking about God." She said, "It's unbelievable. Wherever we go, even in the military, wherever we go in these state colleges, everybody's afraid to talk about God. It's said that we can't talk about God. It's a separation of church and state thing." And so, you know, the more that the government collectivizes and takes over these things, you're going to lose certain freedoms. And so, you know, beware the, you know, the social justice piper. this could take you in directions as a Catholic that you're not going to like, and that's what happens when you try to do a one-size-fits-all approach. It's much better if you can have decentralization and many options. Now, it might mean that in a country of 330 million people, for some reason, 20 to 30 million aren't getting health care. But figure out a way to address those 20 to 30 million without destroying the entire system and you know, creating a whole new system for everybody, when 70, 80, 90% of people are happy with what they have. But this is what kind of the socialists and the collectivists often want to do. It's the fatal conceit, as Hayek spoke of socialism and collectivism and communism.
Yeah, I think that's what often gets missed in the church's teachings about social justice, is that the church starts from the standpoint that there are no one-size-fits-all solutions. It emphasizes subsidiarity. It emphasizes, you know, these social problems need to be addressed at the lowest level of human engagement, and then built up from there. And that safeguards against this type of centralization that you're right. I mean, that just leads to oppression.
Well, it's the family, I'm going to say. And then we're almost out of time. But right. I would say it's the family. When you have strong families, you have strong communities, you have strong faith communities that are then in a better position to help those who are being underserved, rather than, which lends itself to this whole principle of subsidiarity, is because we take care of each other. We don't have to rely on external forces like a federal government to come in and solve some of these problems. But you know what, Dr. Kengor, we're going to have you back on really soon because we are totally out of time. We've spent we need like 3 hours. We need like a 3 hour. Yeah. Hey, Kent, extend the show.
Yes, right.
But our guest today.
Yeah, no, thanks. I love coming on. You guys are great. And I got to tell you, too, Tim, thanks for the rosary that you gave me at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. This is a power rosary, man.
Oh, yeah.
This thing is impressive.
Yeah, that's a rugged rosary.
They said, "Wow, where'd you get that?"
Glad you
really
like
nice.
It. Well, I next time we see each other, we'll have to pray the rosary together.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. I'd love to come back. Love to come back.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Take care. God bless.
All right.
All right, guys.
We'll be back in just a couple minutes to wrap it up right after this. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Besides going to Mass every Sunday, we're all encouraged to spend some time with our Lord each week, to shut out distractions, present our prayers to God, and then just listen. In today's hectic world, that sounds impossible, doesn't it? Well, chances are there's an adoration chapel in a Catholic church not far from where you live, a place where you can spend an hour or just a few minutes in the real presence of our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament, in a quiet, peaceful atmosphere where you can really talk to Jesus, and more importantly, He can talk to you. Many chapels are open 24 hours a day. Here are some of the places where you'll find adoration chapels: at Our Lady of Mount Carmel, St. Alphonsus in Zionsville, St. Louis de Montfort in Fishers, and St. Maria Gravetti in Westfield. Why not stop by soon? Jesus is there. and he is waiting to talk to you.
If it wasn't for you all, I don't know what I would do.
Catholic Radio Indy.
What an absolute blessing you are.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. We've just finished a long conversation, but a great conversation with Dr. Paul Kengor. And I got to say, guys, there were a lot of comments that were made in there that, you know, sparked things in my thoughts. You know, for example, when he mentioned that, you know, a certain percentage of millennials gave an approving nod to Vladimir Lenin. The only thing that ran through my mind is, are you sure they're not confusing him with John Lennon?
I'm not sure they would know who John Lennon was either.
I may be showing my age again there.
But yeah, there was a lot in that interview. And, you know, I think one of the things I wanted to go back to was, you know, the observation about the materialism and that kind of leading to the dark places that communism does. People from within the Soviet Union made that observation very quickly. I mean, that's kind of Solzhenitsyn's whole message of the spiritual impoverishment that goes along with communism and socialism, and the antidote to it being religion and the capturing of the transcendental and the realization that, you know, the material aspects of life are only a small portion of the good life.
Yeah, that's it's a fundamental reason to oppose socialism, progressivism, communism, is that it completely misunderstands the human person, and because it cuts us off from our final destiny, which is beatitude with God.
Right. And I also think, I'm glad we talked a lot about the distinction between social justice and socialism, because the church is very much in favor of social justice. You know, the church has, you know, the popes have put out several encyclicals, you know, going back, you know, a couple hundred years now almost, about the importance of promoting social justice and the importance of trying to create a just society. But how that's done is incredibly important, and central to that, you're exactly right, Tim, central to that is respecting and promoting the dignity of the human person.
Well, I think one of the things that comes to my mind when I look at the whole situation, where if you're looking at socialism and, you know, the Marxist theories and those types of things, it's really a utopian idea that's looking at taking human nature out of the equation altogether. And every time I see this situation, all I can come back to, and Tim and I were discussing this before the show, all I can come back to is, for all these people who read the Communist Manifesto and say, yeah, that's the ideal, that's the way we want to go, I say, next book you need to read is Animal Farm.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. 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 When you read Orwell's Animal Farm, you see how quickly the pigs take over and how they enrich themselves. I mean, because the other thing about communism, it doesn't have in view just basic Christian doctrines like original sin, fallen human nature, concupiscence. It doesn't account really for any of that.
And I have to say, anybody who has read the Communist Manifesto, it's very hard to come, after having read it, to the conclusion, oh, this is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It has a different kind of, I mean, that's, I think Dr. Kengor brought it up, you know, someone who says, oh, I'm in favor, and you're like, well, have you read it? Well, maybe not. You know,
right,
they probably
exactly
haven't. Because if you take it seriously, but there's an infatuation with communism, with social, and with progressivism that's still with us and probably will be with us for the foreseeable future, because it seems to present it at some level a way of addressing inequalities, right? And so it seems a system by which you can address inequalities. We would say, and I think Dr. Kengor brought it up, there's an honest disagreement between ends and means on how we might go about that. And for the Catholic, it all comes down to what? Love. Right. And you're not going to see the word love in the Communist Manifesto.
Right. And that's where we're going to have to leave it for this week. That is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Catholic Radio Indy. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at CatholicRadioIndy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.